across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
On this Monday, February 26, 2024, back from the break, and I brought friends Greg Brock in Waukesha, Selena Heller in Eau Claire, Brittany Merlot, Civic Media meteorologist in the Wausau area, and what?
What did you just call me?
I said Greg Bach, but there was like this little, Brock thing.
Yeah,
in there.
I'm not a brewer. I'm not a baseball player, sir.
First day back from break, and I'm getting absolutely no slack from the producer man over there working so hard at being perfect himself.
You know what?
You know what, man? You're ruining. I'm going to hold up my Jamaica, my good vibes. You're ruining my good vibes. My GVs. Selena Heller's with us again with the cat. Whiskers hasn't been on TV in a couple of weeks here, and it shows.
Yeah. I mean, he's freshly bathed. He needed to show it off.
Yep. There it is.
So cute.
So much going on here, including the dawn of a new era at Civic Media. You see what I did there?
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, see, Maggie Dawn joins us later in the hour to talk about moving her evening show to afternoons starting today here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's also a weird, weird weather day, which is where we bring in Brittany Merlot for the weather part, not the weird, weird part, because not only do you have winter weather advisories up north for light snow, even though there's not a cloud in the sky here in Chippewa Falls, we've got our first red flag warnings of the year already for fire danger because there's so little snow. And Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. The sun is up, a frosty 23 degrees. I went for a UTV ride around Tigerton. Mostly county and town roads are open to UTV, ATV traffic, Rob. So there you go. You got everything from light snow to ATV trails to fire danger, Brittany.
We've got it all, that's for sure. And how about some record-breaking warmth on top of that as well? So here we go today. What's going to happen is it's going to be bright and beautiful, ton of sunshine, and a lot of wind. In fact, it's going to be whipping out of the south up to 20 to 30 miles per hour. When you take the sunny, warm conditions and the crazy winds on top of a dry air mass, you have that fire risk there for us. So the highest concern is over Iowa, but the closer you live to Iowa and to southwestern parts of the state, definitely avoid burning. Be careful of your sparks. Don't throw away that cigarette butt out the car window. Please be careful today because any sort of spark or fire that starts is going to spread extremely rapidly. And we are lacking that snowfall. We are lacking that moisture. There's a lot of dry, dead vegetation out there that'll just light up really fast. So this is the big first time this season that we have to worry about this. Of course, as we go through the next month or so, this will be the concern, but just be careful out there, but enjoy the warmth. I mean, today we're climbing to high temperatures in the 60s. In fact, records across Madison today is 61 degrees, and you're going to climb into the mid-60s. Same thing for Wausau, 59-degree temperature. We're going to climb to about 61 degrees. So just breaking record highs all day today with these windy conditions.
Very much so, Rob, noting there was a grass fire in northern Waupaca County near Clintonville yesterday. And the temperatures, they change quickly here from 6 to 7 a.m. now that the sun's coming up a little bit earlier. I mean, it's already 32 here on Lake Wissota. It's up to 34 where Greg is in Waukesha. Temperatures jumping almost 5 degrees, over the past hour. We're getting to that time of year. Spring. It's going to be March this week.
It is.
I sent Brittany a message on Friday asking what is going on because it was snowing in Milwaukee and Kenosha and
Is that what the message was? I was like, what is he talking about?
I like how you just didn't message me back. And then I'm like, oh, she probably thinks I'm insane.
No, silly Greg.
It was snowing and we had to throw salt down and
whoa.
Yeah.
What's that?
And now it's gone. But of course, now it's gone.
Yeah. Yep. So he withdraws the question. That's over and done with. Brittany, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning.
Have a good day.
All right. Also in the Up North News Daily newsletter today, you can read about Wisconsin's Supper Club Chasers. Jim and Michelle travel the state. They have visited 110 supper clubs and counting. They run an entire Facebook page called Supper Club Chasers, devoted to sharing their experiences with more than 13,000 followers. There's also a story about programs that make UW education even more affordable. Read all that and more. Sign up over at upnorthnewswi.com. That is also where you'll find stories that are worked on by one Selena Heller, who's been working on a series of stories during the break here. And Selena, why don't we start with some agricultural news? Because, I mean, Wisconsin's known for beer, for brewing beer, but I don't think we talk enough about, you know, the ingredients that go into it and the Wisconsin farm connection.
Right. Farmers are wanting to kind of get involved in all of this. And so for a lot of years now, they've been, already they incorporate hops, locally grown hops. So now the next thing is barley. So that's what they're kind of trying to test out.
All right. And who did we talk to about this?
So Jerry Clark is one of the UW Extension ag agents across the state that's been working on this. There are a few others, but he's been really involved the last several years testing barley in different farms across the state. But also right now there's a test plot in New Auburn at Jim Pingle's farm, and it's winter barley. So winter barley is actually planted in October, harvested in early summer. So that's kind of a cool, different twist.
Let's hear what these guys had to say, starting with Jerry Clark, who was a guest here a couple weeks back, who is an amazing and now award-winning farm advisor across this part of western Wisconsin. Here's what Jerry had to say.
Well, we're trying to establish winter barley as a potential crop here in western Wisconsin. So winter barley is an annual, but it's planted in the fall of the year and then harvested more in the early summer. So we're trying to see if this crop will, first introduce it into a cropping system that already exists with growers with corn and soybeans. But the point behind it is try to provide a local ingredient for the brewing industry. So we're seeing local craft brewers that are starting to show up. And they always have an interest in a local ingredient. So if we can get the malt from locally grown barley, then we can maybe fill in a niche or provide some added value to existing farms that are maybe interested in growing winter barley.
And then it was Jim Pingle, who's actually farming that test plot that Selena talked to more about growing this new type of crop.
But in talking with one of the local brewers, they would like to have local grown barley as that local factor, so that they, when they say local beer, they can say, yeah, and this was the barley was sourced from fields around here.
Mm-hmm. So it's always about the buying local, growing local, supporting local.
Oh, right. And then I talked with that brewer that he has been talking to. It's Ryan Stolt from Bloomer Brewing Company. And he said that's what it is. Really, people come to local breweries to get the local ingredients. That's what it's all about. It's not about the big beer companies. It's about kind of sourcing those things right out of your backyard. And what's really interesting is if you grow local barley, the geology, the everything that is the makeup of Wisconsin is kind of into that barley. So it's a unique flavor, unique everything that goes into that beer, because anything that's grown just here is just unique to Wisconsin and it has a whole different flavor. So that's kind of the coolness of it.
And Greg, you know, you have your own favorites, you know, your own locally, mm-hmm. you know, sourced and grown
yeah.
and brewed beers down there. Plus you've got the big one down there as well with Miller and others. So
who?
we're just adding to the variety yeah. pack of frosty beverages.
Oh yeah. And I used to work at Lakefront Brewery and that's Selena, you're absolutely right. When you can tell people there was a beer there called Wisconsinite, every single ingredient came from Wisconsin and people loved it. And it was, it was a really, really good beer too, but yeah, it was really fun to be able to say every single ingredient. Cause most of the times you're getting your hops from Pacific Northwest, and we got theirs from the Yucca Valley. But to be able to bring it all in from Wisconsin, be like, here you go, a Wisconsin-made beer. It was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And it's like the hops are a little more, a little easier to get. Yeah. And you need a malter. And that's kind of the problem, because with farmers and making big batches is the tricky part. So that's what they're trying to figure out now. New Glarus does some of it with local barley, but more and more farmers are trying to get into it now.
All right. And so Celine's got that story working for us. And in a little bit, she's going to talk to us about a TV production company that's looking for some Wisconsin cabin owners with a good story, and about a cruise company shutting down. So no more cruises for this company on the Mississippi River. So those are all coming up in just a couple of moments here. We'll take a quick break for sports at 7:17 to tell you that the Bucks are back on the winning track here since the All-Star break. They were in Philadelphia yesterday for the first return of Doc Rivers to Philadelphia, where he coached the Sixers from 2020 to 2023 before being fired at the end of last season. The Bucks beat the Sixers 119-98, behind 30 points by Giannis. Damian Lillard had 24 points. The Bucks will host Charlotte tomorrow at 7 p.m. The Badger men's basketball team will be in Bloomington, Indiana tomorrow at 6 p.m. to play the Hoosiers. And so both the Bucks and Hoosiers games are on stations along the Civic Media radio network. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more details. The 7th-ranked Marquette men's basketball team trounced Xavier on Sunday, 88-64, winning their 10th game in the past 11. They will host Providence on Wednesday evening. The 6th-ranked Badger men's hockey team swept the Nittany Lions at Penn State over the weekend. They stay within 2 points of Michigan State, and they will play the Spartans for the Big Ten regular season title in the regular season finale coming up this next weekend at the Kohl Center. And the Badger women's hockey team, ranked 2nd in the country, defeated the number 1 team, Ohio State, 4-2 on Saturday night, scoring 4 unanswered goals to get the upset and end the regular season. Next, the Badgers are back in action at home to host the first round of the conference tournament against St. Thomas Friday at 5, Saturday at 4, and then, if necessary, Sunday at 4 for a best 2 out of 3 series there. All right, still ahead, more with Selena Heller, the stories that she's working on for Up North News, and then Motherhood for Good coming up at the bottom of the hour to talk about that Alabama Supreme Court ruling and its impact on IVF, and Maggie Dawn. All that and more still ahead, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. What a state of saying, don't you hesitate. That's Corinne Bailey Ray, who turns 45 years old today. Again, you can catch all those birthdays and historical notes in today's history lesson weekday mornings at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. Still to come this week, tomorrow, we have Deborah Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters on the League celebrating its 104th anniversary and its work to continue increasing access to the ballot box. We'll talk tomorrow as well to Civic Media reporter James Kelly on the way that some county Republican parties in Wisconsin have been funneling cash in a way that's got them and a legislator in some legal hot water connected to the Trump campaign. Wednesday's homeroom segment is all about Public Schools Week, which is being celebrated this week. On Thursday, Kristen Lyerly's Women Win Wisconsin connects us with Julie Hancock of the New Blue Pack for Northeast Wisconsin Women Running for Office. On Friday, we'll have Mark Jacob and Dan Schumacher as always. And that's all just our 7 a.m. hour. In the 6 a.m. hour this week, of course, we have, as usual, Christina Lori on Tuesday, Climate Check with Melissa Baldoff on Wednesday, Joe Zepecki on Thursday, and Kia Vakil on Friday. So a busy week ahead here on Up North News Radio. Selena Heller joins us once again to talk about the stories that she's working on for Up North News. And one of the things we talked about earlier was a TV production company that's looking for Wisconsin cabin owners with a good story. What kind of stories are they looking for? What kind of show are we talking about?
They are looking for cabins that have been passed down through generations. So kind of a family heirloom. So that's what they're looking for. It's a Minneapolis-based TV production company, and they want good stories. And they ultimately want a series that is about cabin remodeling. So you might be able to get it.
Okay. See, I knew we were going there somehow. I'm like, it's not enough just to have a story about it being handed down, because all these things are, there's some kind of a project. They find asbestos, or they find, you know, just something that goes wrong. There's always got to be drama. So now we're doing it with cabins instead. Right.
Yes. But they say that they want to keep some of the new old things, but then also add some new things in the mix. So, you know, kind of a mix of old and new, but keep the story, the good story. And we've had, so I posed this, you know, to our people on our social media pages, if they have a cabin story to tell too. And there are several on them already. Lots of people from all over have shared their stories on our pages about their cabins that have been passed down and remodel projects and things like that. So it was interesting just to read last night.
I think some people would be very grateful about that, because if it's been passed down for generations, it's a little bit older. And if it hasn't been fixed by now, it's because, you know, cost might be a factor or other things. So that's probably a good thing that's going to happen. I didn't know if it was more like a house hunter's situation, you know, if they're looking to buy, people are looking to buy cabins versus remodel. It reminds me that when we had moved to Grand Cayman 10 years ago, and we were in touch with the people from House Hunters International in case we were going to go looking for, you know, a house on Grand Cayman. And so we kind of got familiar with the show and everything. And then we didn't hear from them till we were about 6-8 months into living there. And they reached out to us on a day when Sherry'd had a bad day that day at clinic. You know, it's like, you know, things were in short supply, prices are high. There, you know, people were being on the surly side. And House Hunters International reaches out and says, "Hey, you still looking at buying a house?" And our response was, "We're thinking of leaving next week. We're not really in a good position to talk to about buying a home." Now, later on, we might have been more amenable to the idea, but at that point in time, no, we weren't going to remodel. We weren't going to buy. We were going to be happy renters. So if you have a much friendlier cabin story that you'd like to share, Greg, do you have a family with cabins or cabin access?
No.
Oh, that's so sad.
Very sad.
As I get older, I want to have land up north, and I want to have a cabin, and I want that like so bad. But it's like, you know how hard it is to get a home to begin with?
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, and then like you want it fairly close, because then I think about, oh, to trek somewhere.
Yeah.
Few hours away is like, oh yeah, man.
You gotta take all your stuff. It's an old George Carlin routine. You gotta take some of your stuff and put it in a suitcase, and then, you know, from there you get a smaller stuff group of your stuff somewhere, and it's so much cleaning.
Yep. And closing it down for the winter. And yep. So maybe, Greg, if we keep talking, you won't sound so far.
We are saving you so much money right now.
I was gonna say, I don't want one anymore. Because I think about all my friends who have cabins are like, yeah, we're going this weekend. We're going to 4 days. We got to shut it down. I'm like, that sounds awful.
You got to go mow the lawn.
Yeah. Yep. Loved it as a kid. It was always great to go to you know, our uncle's cabin up north, because we did none of the work. You know, you just get to enjoy it all. But now I hear about friends who go up there and it's like, oh, yeah, we got to fix the boat lift, or, you know, we've got mice or whatever the case may be.
There was a storm, so you had to the cleanup.
Meanwhile, all the people who are very happy with their cabins actually like this. They're like, yes, talk people out of it. We like where we are. We don't want more. Leave us alone, you know. So good for them. And then the other story you're working on is about a cruise ship company shutting down, which used to include Mississippi River cruises with Wisconsin stops.
Well, right over here on this part of the state, La Crosse is very familiar with all of these cruise ships coming and docking, and the people pour out into the city and learn about the city. They incorporate language into their tours about the stops, you know, they make. So La Crosse is kind of sad about this. It's American Queen Voyagers. They had a different name before, but this is the latest name. So they have cruise ships like American Queen, and that's the biggest one, kind of the most popular. It's a big, beautiful paddle wheel, and they host cruise ships up and down the Mississippi River along with other rivers, but most notably over here makes a lot of stops at Riverside Park in La Crosse. The good news is that there are other cruise ships that also come into La Crosse and along the Mississippi River, like the La Crosse Queen and the Viking. So those two will still at least have stops along.
Okay, but you keep saying cruise ship, and I'm thinking more paddle wheels, you know, the mm-hmm. but and I've seen the Viking boats, they're kind of, you know, longer, flatter, but we're not talking like some of these carnival ships that are actually the biggest ones now are wider than the river itself in some places here. These things are ridiculous.
Well, no, but I mean, these ships coming into port, they're pretty stately when they come in. So they're so beautiful, and people pay a lot of money apparently to be on one of these cruises, and they learn all about the stops along the river. They stay on these cruise ships. So, I mean, they're really neat. I've seen them, gone to La Crosse and been in La Crosse when these things come in, and they're quite a spectacle. People come in and take a lot of pictures, but no, not like a carnival cruise ship.
No. And I'm still scarred, as you know, from being kidnapped aboard a paddle wheeler by Al Gore. Back in 2000.
I recall. You were on there. You couldn't get off.
Hour after hour after hour, missing deadlines, missing newscasts, having to hitchhike back with my photographer. Yeah. Paddle wheelers and Al Gore. All for a story that never got to air anyway. So Selena Heller, we'll save that the rest of that for another time, but see what she's doing over at upnorthnewswi.com, upnorthnewswi and socials. Thank you, Selena. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. When we come back, our friends from Motherhood for Good, Kate and Danielle, will be here, and we will be talking about that Alabama Supreme Court ruling and the impact on women seeking to start families next here up north. Back now on Up North News Radio on this Monday morning, February 26th. And we've got our friends from Motherhood for Good here, Danielle Scampini-Lynn, Kate Duffy, joining us to talk about, unfortunately, you know, again, some serious political notes that affect families everywhere. But first off, just good to catch up after a little break here. How y'all doing?
Yeah, doing good. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back here. And again, helping parents understand, you know, these things that you hear about in the news, and they go, well, does it affect me? And in this case, we're going to talk about something that doesn't affect Wisconsin women directly right now. But there are serious implications here that should decide, you know, how you look at candidates in Wisconsin and elsewhere. So, Kate, as we talk about this Alabama Supreme Court ruling about how do you define a minor child? How did you first hear about the ruling? How did you interpret it? What was your first reaction to it?
Yeah, so we've actually seen a lot of chatter about this within our community. Which makes sense. We are mostly made up with a lot of mothers, many of whom have had to utilize IVF to start their families. So I think we saw it start to circulate kind of last week and look more into it. And basically what happened, for those who don't know, is there was, this actually happened back in 2020, there was an incident in a Alabama fertility clinic where the details are still a little bit fuzzy on how this happened, but somebody got access to the frozen chamber where frozen embryos were, got a vial out, dropped it on the ground, and the embryos inside were destroyed. And we know at least three of the couples who had embryos destroyed in that incident, because those are the three couples who ended up filing lawsuit against the hospital. They ended up, there's a number of ways they could have gone about this, and there are accidents that unfortunately happen within IVF clinics and within this scientific process. And I just want to say, like, obviously the situation for them is awful, because people spend so much time, energy, and love going into this IVF process. So to have successful frozen embryos and then have them destroyed is, I mean, it's awful. But they ended up filing a lawsuit and actually claiming wrongful death rather than like negligence or a number of different legal ways they could have gone. And it actually got, the case got rejected previously by, let me see, I think two different courts within Alabama, got eventually up to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court said, yes, actually this does apply for wrongful death of the Wrongful Death of a Minor Act, and that applies to embryos, frozen embryos that aren't transplanted. And it kind of started to blow everything up, because what that does by making those frozen embryos people is applies the personhood logic, which is that life begins at conception, and opens up the door for so many other like legal cases to cause concern for the IVF process.
And I can't help, Danielle, but note, and folks will call it oversimplification, I disagree, but when it comes to what you would call a definition of full personhood, you now have a greater legal definition of full personhood for frozen embryos than for women themselves who are looking to maybe start a family.
Right. I mean, the logic, it does not make any sense. And I know a good amount about the IVF process. Two of my nieces were conceived via IVF, several of my good friends. And just thinking about the amount of time, effort, money, like physical toll that it takes to consider that the end product of that matters more from this legal standpoint than the person going through that is rage inducing. And also it doesn't logistically make sense when you think about how, like, the actual process of how IVF works. It's a long process. There's a lot of trial and error. And so that's why if this is true, according to the court, that those frozen embryos are people, then it basically does not allow for any trial and error that is so necessary for the IVF process. And it just doesn't add up.
Right. If something doesn't take and a couple wanted to be difficult, they could, say that it was the doctor's fault or the clinic's fault. And that, again, there was some kind of negligent homicide or something. Again, the doors are wide open. And Kate, I just, Kristen made this point last hour as well. You cannot separate the judicial from the political in this.
Yes.
These are political bodies. The Alabama Supreme Court and the politicians who are trying to backpedal away from this, but their names are already on bills that would indicate their support for what this court did.
Yeah. As somebody who really started getting much more involved in politics just in the last couple of years, I'm learning so much about how important the judicial branch of government is in making law, or not making laws, but interpreting our laws that ultimately, make different policies for the daily lives that we live. And actually one of our members who couldn't make it today is a lawyer, and she works for a state Supreme Court, not the Wisconsin one. But so she's been really helpful in helping us understand that. And yes, this Alabama State Supreme Court, they actually do have partisan elections, and all of the current members are Republicans.
Shocking.
And there had been two cases that had come before that kind of set this up. And a lot of what we're seeing in these political priorities are really that it's a long game. And there's been groups who have been trying to, chip away at women's reproductive health for a very long time for their like theological reasons that, again, they believe that life begins at conception, and they may have, obviously Dobbs brought the overturning of Roe, and we knew that was never just about abortion. And we're now seeing the next phase of that kind of come to life.
Right, because, you know, again, from a political standpoint, I've been hearing Republican politicians for well over a decade now say, you know, what we really need to do to address the worker shortage is people need to have more babies, you know, because they don't want to talk about immigration. They don't talk about, you know, legal immigration reform. They want to address the labor shortage by encouraging people to get pregnant. And yet at the same time, they're doing everything possible, Danielle, to restrict the way that women and couples and families make these decisions about planning their families.
Well, right. They want a specific type of family to exist in the United States. They mm-hmm. want the people that they want having more kids to have more kids. And again, it just, why is that any of their business? Like, if for the party that says that they're all about small government, like, this is as not small government as you can be. And so it's not about small government. It's about control, which is the exact opposite of what they're saying they are, their like fundamental priority is.
Well, and we're seeing so many contradicting opinions already come out from politicians over the weekend, where reporters, rightfully so and thankfully so, have been asking a lot of these Republican politicians what their thoughts are on this. And many of them have been saying, oh, I do support IVF, but also they're saying they support life at conception. And actually, there's a bill that just went through the House pretty recently called the Life at Conception Act, which they also signed on to and are co-sponsors. And those two things are contradictory. So there's so many gray areas here, and they can't be on both sides. And I don't know if they just like don't understand it, or if it's kind of just a manipulation tactic, but
hope people don't see it. Right. Exactly. And as Kristen noted last hour, Mike Gallagher, yep. perhaps one of the reasons he was feeling pressure was, you know, pressure that frankly, you know, you guys and others were putting on him to say, why is your name on this? What, how do you really feel about this Life Begins at Conception Act? And he's on there along with Glenn Grothman and Scott Fitzgerald. Again, no surprises, but voters are wise to it now.
Yeah, I'll be calling Scott Fitzgerald's office, my rep, later today, just to make it known that this does not make sense and is not an effective use of our nation's time, energy, resources. Yeah, it just doesn't, it's just so unbelievably infuriating. And, you know, it's playing politics with people's lives. Like, again, thinking about the way the IVF process works, it's not something that it's like, oh, it's not available in Alabama. They can go, you know, next door to the next state. Like, the IVF process takes like months for a lot of people. And not only once, if you have a successful transfer, you have to continue receiving that care for the first trimester of pregnancy. Like, this is something that will completely shut down this availability for this very important treatment for so many people just because they want a political win. And that is outrageous, just absolutely outrageous.
A political win, and also what you said, you know, a specific type of, you know, quote-unquote nuclear family. Look, if you want to be a party or a group or whatever of family values, you can teach those values to anybody. You can teach good values to anybody. You don't need it just to be, you know, the white middle class picket fence, you know, 2.5 children. You know, you can win on your values and positions without having to be, in my opinion, downright Taliban-esque about how you control people's bodies and what they do. So, Kate, to look at the positive side of this, rather than looking at the sponsors of the Life Begins at Conception Act, there's a bill out there as well to protect access to IVF that you'd like to see people, you know, federal representatives and senators talk about as well.
Yeah, and we'll be posting more about that. It's called the Access to Family Building Act. There's a Senate and a House equivalent, and it's the Senate one was brought forth by Senator Tammy Duckworth out of Illinois, who's been very vocal about her use of IVF and gratitude for the process. And so that is something people can call about and be calling their federal reps about to sign on to that so we can try to protect access to IVF. But also what we really want people to do is understand how closely this ties into elections up and down the ballot and really be talking to their family and friends about what's going on here. I think we've been seeing reproductive rights attacked for a while now, and I think people you know, abortion specifically can be a polarizing issue and people, you know, don't want to talk about it as much. We obviously are always trying to overcome that and hope that people do talk about it so it's not as stigmatized. But this in particular, we're seeing a lot more women coming out of the woodwork who have not been politically active previously, or at least politically vocal to their communities. And we're seeing, I mean, I'm hearing a lot from people who are having conversations with family and friends who have always voted pretty Republican or never really saw the side of what needed to happen here, who are saying, oh my gosh, this is really scary. Let's talk about this. So I think the silver lining here, if there is one to be found, is that this may open up a lot of people's eyes who previously didn't get as involved before about how scary this is and what they can do, and hopefully get them out there to vote for people who are gonna protect women's rights and get, like, these politicians need to stop making decisions about things that they don't know because they didn't go to medical school.
No, most of them didn't. From the text line from the Waukesha area, Carolyn writes in, I agree the oligarchs of our country and state want us to create a cheap labor pool for them. Seen through this prism, attacks on birth control, public schools, voter suppression, workers' rights, pay, and unions make sense. And for some people, yeah, it is a single issue, you know, based in religion or values or what have you. But in other cases, yeah, there's larger agendas at play. So to wrap things up, Danielle, what do you want people to do with all this information? You know,
yes, that's exactly right. Like, people can be one issue voters, but politics and policy are intersectional. So you might be a one issue voter, but the person that you are voting for might be someone who then can influence a judicial nominee who is going to be on the bench for life. So you can't just think about, like, okay, this one thing that I care about is the only thing that I'm going to vote on, because it's going to affect every aspect of your life, whether you like it or not. And we're seeing that here. You know, you never know how those lifetime appointments are going to play out. And then it takes, like Kate said before, it's a long game. It takes a lot to get back from that. So just remember to keep that in mind when you are voting. Like, think big picture and think about how our political system is all connected.
And that's where Motherhood for Good comes in. Danielle Lynn, Kate Duffy, thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. Maggie Dawn talks about the afternoon premiere for new show next. You're up north. Maggie Dawn gave Greg Bach just a very easy setup when we asked Maggie, look, it's going to be your first appearance on Up North News Radio. You've got this new afternoon show premiering today. And we asked Maggie, what do you want for walk-up music? Maggie, do you recall exactly how you put it, what you want for walk-up music? Oh, I think we got you muted here. Let's get you unmuted.
Was there an FCC inappropriate word in there somewhere?
I don't even.
Nope.
There wasn't.
Nope.
Okay.
Did it have the word boss in it somehow?
This song?
Yeah, let's go for boss. Greg, how did you understand the instructions?
I says anything kick butt by a
kick
woman.
Kick butt. We'll go with that. Yeah, kick butt a woman.
And I picked Boys Wanna Be Here by Peaches, one of the most bombastic, feminist, in-your-face rock stars who ever walked the face of the earth, and might be the only song of hers I can play on the radio.
Yes, basically. Greg.
Welcome in Maggie by saying, Greg, mission accomplished. We found a way to bring in Maggie Dawn. Maggie, how are you?
I'm doing really well. It's super exciting. I'm actually a little nervous. I don't usually get nervous, but I'm nervous today.
Okay, well,
a new
for a
foray,
day.
Right?
That's right. From moving from the evenings to the afternoons, from 2 to 4 on the weekday afternoons, and taking on a larger role here at Civic Media overall. But because we haven't been able to introduce you formally to the early risers out here in Civic Media land, let's find out a bit more about the Maggie Dawn story. What were you doing before you got here?
I have been for the last 7+ years the chief legal officer for Milwaukee County, which folks sometimes get confused with the district attorney. Don't call me if you have parking tickets or criminal charges that you need to get out of. That's not my office. My office is responsible for all of Milwaukee County's civil legal needs. So whether there's real estate transactions, helping the regulatory framework for a public-private mental health hospital, the zoo, the airport, advising elected officials about their powers and responsibilities. I helped advise the first inaugural independent redistricting committee that Milwaukee County used after the 2020 census. So I've been through redistricting. I was the county's lead lawyer when we were sued by the Trump campaign in the recount of 2020, which basically took out my entire, well, it's mostly all of November and December. I didn't know which way was up. It was in the heat of COVID. Let's see, what else? Oh, I sued the opioid manufacturers and distributors on behalf of Milwaukee County, collecting the largest amount of settlement money in Wisconsin's history to a local municipality. We're about to sue the insulin manufacturers and distributors and PBAs because, again, a 1,000 price increase might look a little bit like price fixing. So that's just a little sampling, just a few couple.
And that's what she just did today.
Yeah, right.
So all of this leads you to a little radio booth in Waukesha, Wisconsin, because I believe I'm representing this correctly. You got things to say, and now you want to get to be able to say it in the afternoon. What kinds of things you want to talk about, based either on your legal background or, you know, taking more of a foray into the political side of things?
Yeah, I've worked in virtually all levels of government. I started out my career as a lawyer, as a elbow clerk for Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Michael Caney, who was a conservative appointee. That was a really fascinating experience. I've worked on both state and local campaigns. But after my clerkship, I worked on Wall Street for nearly a decade and worked primarily in securities litigation, which is when companies that work in the financial sector make misrepresentations, they get sued for securities litigation. And that's what I helped defend. I worked for a number of large investment banks, but you can only do that for so long before it starts to take a wee bit of a toll. You want to use your superpowers for some good. So that is when I came into public service at that time. But it's been a wild ride because of that. And my graduate work before I went to law school is in mathematical economics. So bringing all of that background to bear, I like to call it from Wall Street to our street. We're going to try to break things down, pull things off the headlines, explain why it matters to each of us. But I love sports. I love the arts. I love food. We're going to do all kinds of stuff. Nothing is safe from coverage on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'll put it that way.
She'll talk about spaghetti bolognese and with spite if she doesn't like it.
Exactly.
Listen to this background. I just feel like a carnival barker over here by comparison, but people are going to learn a lot. They'll get the call in, I assume, and
of course,
share their point of view with you.
Yeah, I think my aim is for us to try to learn together, right? It's so people tell people what to think all the time. I don't like to tell people what to think, but I like to work together about how we think about things. We're talking about policy. Is it efficient? Is it effective? Does it serve to help most of us? Does it reflect our community's values? And I think when you frame discussions in those terms, we find that we have way more in common with one another than we ever thought. In other words, politics does one thing. It works to get certain people elected. But good policy attempts to do another, and that is help the vast majority of your neighbors, friends, colleagues, and family members. And those are two separate questions.
I was going to close kind of as we began the show, having a little fun with former Governor Scott Walker, again, making the ridiculous illustration of a red map and saying Wisconsin's a red state because there's so much more red because, you know, land votes. No, it doesn't, Scott. But, you know, just as somebody, I think, is as interested in I am as bridging that gap. So many people want to exacerbate the divides between Milwaukee, Madison, and the rest of the state as if their votes should count less, as if their policies should be, you know, less effective. But as somebody who has lived and worked there and you representing the place there, I mean, do you feel like you can take that message to the rest of Wisconsin across the statewide radio network?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. My clients at Milwaukee County included conservatives, very traditional Republicans, folks that more were on the MAGA side of things, as well as extraordinary progressives, some Democratic socialists. My advice was always solid, objective, independent, and it helped them make better decisions. I hope that I can effectively take that same approach to the airwaves and help us all make better decisions when we get in a voting booth, help us ask better questions of our elected officials, and help us hold government and elected officials accountable to the values and policies that serve us all best.
And that's what you're going to get, that and so much more with Maggie Dawn coming up on this afternoon for the premiere, 2 to 4. Maggie, thank you so much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Pat.
It. Have a great run.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. Greg, thank you. Thanks for your patience as we go back to resetting the clock, day one on the post-vacation era. Thanks so much for being a part of all this. Again, follow what we're doing over at UpNorthNewsWI.com. Have a great day. We'll see you Tuesday.